in the dirt. Some digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
So my guest today on Digging in the Dirt is author Jeff Goodell. He's an American author and contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine. And Goodell's writings are known for a focus on energy and environmental issues, and he is a 2016-2017 fellow at the New American Foundation. Jeff is here to talk to me today about his new book, The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World. Welcome, Jeff. Your book has been described as a frightening, scientifically grounded, and starkly relevant look at how climate change will affect coastal cities. And you've been a busy boy traveling around the world, visiting places that are already being affected by sea change, you know, the melting of the ice pack and the rise of seas. Can you give us like one big takeaway from the places you visited?
Well, you know, every place is different. Every city is going to be, and every coastline is going to be affected differently depending on, you know, where they are and what kind of elevation they have and things. But, you know, low-lying coastal cities around the world are in big trouble as the seas continue to rise. They're, you know, been rising faster and faster, and that's going to just accelerate in the decades to come. And you think about the consequences for the Jersey Shore or for New York City or Boston or most of all Miami, and it's pretty dire.
Here, closer to home, you really concentrate on Miami. And I first learned about Miami when my brother-in-law, who's Cuban, goes down to Florida, and he comes back and says, you know, every day I was up to my ankles in water. And yeah. What's going on, you know? And this is like 2 years ago. So why don't you explain to the folks what's happening in Miami?
Well, Miami is, you know, that's how my book started, really, is after Hurricane Sandy. I started thinking about the risks of flooding to various cities, and our scientists recommend that I go down to Miami and have a look at what happens there during king tides. King tides are like the high tides that come every fall. And I was down there, this was, I guess, 4 years ago now, and, you know, wandering through Sunset Harbor, a very wealthy region of Miami Beach, where, you know, the water was up to my knees on a normal day during a king tide. And, you know, what's happening simply is that the, you know, it's a very low-lying area and the water is rising and there's increasing drainage problems there. And the water comes in and it floods out the city. It floods out Miami Beach in the sort of low-lying areas. In the last couple of years, they've put in some pumps and better drainage system to help that, and they've elevated some of the streets, but it's still a problem. And it's going to be a bigger and bigger problem because all of Miami-Dade County is very low-lying. It's only about 6 feet. The highest parts are only about 6 feet above sea level. And you have a lot of really expensive real estate that's right on the water there. And kind of most troubling of all is the it's all built on Swiss cheese. The limestone base that underlies the city is very porous, and so you can't build seawalls and things like that to keep the water out. So all that put together is a big, very troubling future for Miami.
The limestone base is providing porousness so that the water just, when it floods, it just comes up through the limestone. Is that right?
Right.
And then yeah. That also forces out all the septic tanks and things the way they do sewage down there, and that produces E. coli incidents that they're not even reporting, according to your book.
Right. In some neighborhoods, you know, the pollution from floodwaters is a problem, and when you have in-ground septic systems as opposed to sort of municipal sewage systems or wastewater systems, when you have an in-ground septic system, you know, they depend upon having a leach field, an area for it to drain out, and if that leach field gets inundated, it's just going to, you know, bring everything into the floodwaters, and that's what happens in parts of Miami-Dade County.
So the way I got it from reading your book was that we're basically going to be in kind of a couple stages. And the first stage is sort of like bigger and more powerful storms that come in and push the tide into the coastal areas and flood them out, sort of like Houston. And then later on, we're actually going to get inundation where there's going to be flooding and covering of different land masses around the coastal areas. Is that about right?
Well, no. I mean, they're both going to be happening simultaneously. I mean, the sea level rise will gradually get higher and higher and higher. The big question is how much and how fast. But that will be a gradual process that's beginning. You know, that's happening now and will accelerate in the decades to come. And then, you know, the storms will come. Climate scientists have pretty much figured out that warmer surface temperatures of the ocean will increase the intensity of the storm. So we're likely to get perhaps fewer but bigger and more intense storms, sort of like we saw with Harvey and Irma this year. And as those storms are coming in, you know, as the water is higher, it means those storms are going to be even more and more devastating, you know. And so the real question is how much sea level rise we're going to get, how soon. The high end predicted by top scientific agency in the U.S. is as much as 7 feet by the end of the century. And if we get anything even close to that, it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to figure out how much trouble and how much changes it will cause along the coastlines in the U.S. and around the world.
So you're saying like in Miami or buildings along those coastal towns are going to have water like up to the second and third floor?
Well, it depends on what the elevation that they're built at. I think that, you know, if you take the high end scenario of 7 feet, and it could be, there's still a possibility it could be more than that. It could certainly be less. It could be 4 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, but even 3 or 4 feet, you know, it's not going to go into the second floor on a normal day, but that's going to have huge consequences for a place like Miami or a place like the Jersey Shore or Boston and New York. I mean, just the amount of, you know, flooding on the streets, flooding of all kinds of infrastructure, flooding of airports, erosion of beaches, erosion of coastline, flooding of, as we mentioned before, you know, septic systems. It's a huge problem and a hugely costly problem that is going to have big impacts also, of course, on coastal real estate prices. So people who are investing and who own homes and other buildings along these low-lying coasts are going to be in big trouble also.
So how are we going to slow this down, if not stop it? I mean, are we inevitably going to have some real severe problems of flooding in these coastal areas, or can it be stopped and reversed?
No, it can't be stopped and reversed. The reason I called the book The Water Will Come instead of, you know, The Water Might Come Unless We All Get Solar Panels or something like that, is that sea level rise is one of the sure things that's going to happen. Even if we, cut our carbon pollution to zero tomorrow, we would still have significant sea level rise. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't cut carbon pollution and that it isn't really important to reduce our consumption of fossil fuels, because there's many other reasons for that. But just from a sea level rise point of view, it might lower the high end of sea level rise and stretch it out so it happens over a sort of longer period of time. But the basic truth is that we are going to be seeing these rising seas. And so one of the reasons I wrote the book is because we need to start thinking about that and what we're going to do and how we're going to adapt to that and, what the consequences of that will be.
So if it's inevitable, then we're going to see things like sort of mass migration of people out of those areas and coming north or going to high ground. And we have to prepare for that by putting our houses on stilts for the next 30 years? Or, I mean, what are the things that people can do in preparation for what's going to happen?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to remember this is going to be an event. This sea level rise is going to be, you know, kind of fast and slow. So it's going to happen. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, and especially in the next 10 or 15 years, it's going to happen, you know, relatively slowly. But then, after, I would say, after the next 15 years or so, it will start to really accelerate. But it's still, you know, we're talking about something that's going to take place over decades. And the problem is that even sort of small amounts of sea level rise will have big problems with beach erosion and things like that. And I think that people need to be aware of these risks. I think that, you know, some people will decide to stay on the coast and elevate their houses, put them on stilts and things like that. That will certainly help for a while, and maybe that's all they care about is a while. But, you know, the problem with putting houses on stilts and elevating houses is that, you know, it doesn't really help to have your house elevated if you can't get there by the roads, because the roads are underwater or flooded all the time. Or if you're, you know, the stores and everything are closed because of flooding and the, you know, kind of economic decline that will go with people moving out of coastal areas. And yes, I think there will be, you know, a kind of retreat from the coastline that's already happening. You know, people are already selling places in Miami Beach and the Outer Banks of the Carolinas and things because of problems with flooding, and that's just going to accelerate and get worse. And I don't think we're going to have a kind of mass stampede out of South Florida, kind of, you know, in a kind of, you know, month time frame kind of thing. But certainly over the coming decades, we're going to see more and more people decide that it's not worth the risk of living in a place where they're getting flooded more and more often. And especially from an investment point of view, you know, the idea of owning a house in a place like this is going to become a more and more risky venture.
And you won't be able to get insurance besides.
Exactly. Or if you do, then, you know, there may be private insurers who will, you know, I mean, you can basically insure everything if you're willing to pay for it, but it'll be so exorbitantly expensive that nobody but, you know, someone who's really rich will be able to afford it.
So one of the sort of canaries in the coal mine is this article I saw you tweet out about Nags Head, North Carolina. It could have been in your book, but it wasn't. But this is happening right now. They're eroding at a rate of about 6 feet per year right now. And somebody was bitching in the article that, oh man, I have this investment and now it's, I knew it might go down, but it went down 100%. And they're just losing all kinds of beach and they can't keep their houses on these outer islands anymore. So this is happening right in front of our eyes already.
Absolutely. It's happening there. It's happening in the Gulf, along the Gulf Coast, in places in Louisiana and Texas. It's happening, you know, in South Florida. It's absolutely happening. And the thing that's the reason that these value of homes are going down is because people are beginning to realize and calculate that if you're seeing a kind of modest amount of flooding in your area now, or even a small amount, in the very near future, that's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And so what's the value of this house in a place that, you know, in a decade is going to go from sort of pain in the butt kind of flooding to kind of real inundation. And so as real estate takes a decline, it's really tough on coastal cities and counties to keep up revenues from taxes, because the property is literally going underwater. And so, you know, kind of the decline of the tax base at exactly the moment when they need to spend more money on things like, you know, seawalls and raising roads and things like that to give them a temporary reprieve, they don't have it. So it gets tougher and tougher to deal with.
We're speaking to Jeff Goodell, who wrote this book called The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World. That's pretty definitive, Jeff. I mean, it's just, it's like, okay, so we should plan for something like this. But, you know, here's part of the problem, I think, is that somebody in my age group, okay, who is older, is saying things like, I won't be here, you know, we're going to die, and, you know, so I don't need to sell my house right now. I mean, I'm going to be able to live out my life where I am, wherever that may be. I may even be able to move to Florida, even though you might be affected by more hurricanes, stronger hurricanes, whatever. It might disrupt your retirement plans. But that's happening. And then there's just pure out-and-out denial, which is hard to change because people are not seeing it. You mentioned that proverbial story of the frog in the warm water, and it gets hotter and hotter, and finally it's cooked. And that's sort of our predicament. We can't see the climate change happening in front of our eyes until we see water rise or a hurricane that pushes water into Miami like it did just recently. What do we do about something like that? How do we reach people to start understanding the seriousness of the problem?
Well, first of all, I think people who are living in coastal areas that are low-lying are seeing it for themselves. And I think it's becoming more and more evident to people in these areas. I think that, you know, the extreme weather stuff we're seeing with the hurricanes and the wildfires, I think people are really getting it. I think that the sort of, you know, capital of denial is, you know, Congress. I think that it's really Congress and Fox News that is, you know, where the sort of denial is coming from. And I think that's because of money from fossil fuel industry that is, you know, supporting big donations into Congress and contorting the debate. But I think, you know, within the people that I have talked to, Republicans, Democrats, you know, I think that the level of denial is nowhere near as high as it is in Congress. So, you know, I think, and people who decide that, you know, well, I'm going to die soon, or I'm going to, you know, I'll have it for 15 years, and then, you know, that's all I really care about because that's all as long as I'm going to be here. I mean, first of all, that's a pretty irresponsible way of thinking about, you know, the kind of world we're passing on to our kids and grandchildren. But as far as just like the real estate for your own house, if you have a house on a coastline and you want to say, okay, well, I don't really, you know, it doesn't matter to me if it declines in value by half in 15 years, I'll be fine. That's okay. I mean, I think what's important is that people be aware of the risk, be aware of the possibility of this happening or the reality of this happening.
So you don't
think a lot of people have a lot of money invested in their homes on the coast. And for some people who are wealthy enough that it doesn't matter if that real estate declines in value, fine. But for a lot of other people, it does matter. And they need to be thinking about that and about thinking about, you know, can they afford to take a big hit on their investment here?
Yeah, but you know the way they have solutions right now is things like you mentioned beach nourishment, right? And it's billions of dollars a year going into putting beach sand back, which gets eroded, and then it gets eroded again. And this is probably more or less economic, right? I mean, it's like they have these economies of beautiful places to go in the summertime, and they can't afford to lose it all, so they're going to keep trying to put Band-Aids on it for a while.
Yeah, well, that's going to have a very short. And that's true. That's what's happening now. And but that's not the problem. Is that they're quickly not going to be able to afford to continue doing that. I mean, I already know communities who are, you know, questioning that. Not just beach renourishment, but, you know, rebuilding roads and things like that. And it gets very, very expensive very quickly. And, you know, so that's a sort of real short-term Band-Aid. And I mean, that's the problem, is that coastal areas are towns and counties and things are going to go bankrupt because, you know, you're going to have a decline in revenues from property taxes, and you're going to have an increase in costs and beach renourishment and all that. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, Moody's signaled or told cities and counties that municipal bond prices, unless they can prove that they're doing, you know, taking steps to protect themselves from climate change, which of course means sea level rise, their bond ratings are going to go down. And so their money is going to get more expensive for them. And that's a very, very scary thing if you're a city commissioner or a county executive or something, and you're thinking about, you know, how you're going to balance the budget for your, you know, for your city or town.
I guess what bothers me is when I talk to people who are worried about this. I have a colleague here at the station. We're just talking about how you see a lot of people who are concerned about it and know about it, but the general culture, the general television populace, like the weatherman and all these, like you said, the corporate shills, are still in that denial mode. In fact, last week, a University of Alabama Huntsville study came out with two prominent deniers, John Christie and Richard McNider. And they say that not only is temperature rising far more slowly than predicted, the Earth's atmosphere appears to be less sensitive to changing CO2 levels. So what do we do about these guys? I mean, how can we hold them responsible for delaying this and getting us further into a hole?
but those guys, their work has been, you know, discredited and proven wrong for a very long time. You know, I mean, the problem is we have, you know, places like Fox News, which are incredibly powerful kind of propaganda engines that are, you know, spreading this kind of thing around and, you know, raising doubt. And we have a Congress that is, in many cases, you know, bought and paid for by the fossil fuel industry, the Koch brothers, people like that, you know, donate millions and millions of dollars to congressmen and women. And it contorts the sort of politics of the debate. I mean, you know, but there's a kind of inevitability to this, you know. I mean, this is going, you can't lobby physics, you know. I mean, this is going to happen. And the tragedy is that, you know, we're going to get farther and farther, you know, down the line and putting more and more CO2 into the atmosphere and all that before we take dramatic action. And because of the way the inertia in the system is built up, you know, climate change is already a done deal. It's already pushing the system in a direction faster than it's gone before. And so, you know, we're just going to have to figure out how to adapt to a lot of this stuff. And that's what sort of this book is about, is how, you know, how are we going to think about living on the coasts again when you have, you know, rapidly rising seas.
Yeah, I think of Bill McKibben when he says winning slowly is the same as losing, but it looks like we've been losing for too long now.
Well, you know, I mean, it's true in one way, we have been losing for a long time, but on the other hand, it's been incredible amounts of progress made. You know, you look at things like, you know, how the price of renewable power in many places is cheaper than fossil fuel power. You have the incredibly dramatic progress of electric cars, which have a huge amount of promise to reduce, you know, CO2 emissions. I think you have, when you look at all of the polls, you have a big increase in people who understand the risks of climate change, and, you know, the number of deniers is falling. You know, I think that there's a lot of progress that's being made. But when I was in Alaska with President Obama on a trip in September of 2015, he talked about how on this issue, of all issues, there's such a thing as being too late. And it's true, because we're basically in a kind of race against, you know, physics and against time to get reduced carbon emissions, you know, quickly before they can have a big impact on our atmosphere.
So bring it back around to, like, our local thing here. We have Manhattan here, which is an island. I live on Long Island, and it's got three bridges and a tunnel to get off, and a lot of it's low-lying. If you did the belt, if water starts rising significantly, the Belt Parkway would be gone. Things like that would start disappearing over the years. What can you think, what can the tri-state area expect to happen, like, say, 25 years out or 20 years out? Can you sort of be a seer here?
Well, you know, 20, 25 years out is, you know, still, you know, that's in the sort of modest, you know, the real troubles are going to start, you know, around, I would say, between 2040 and 2050 is when you're going to start to see the real sort of exponential kind of possibility for rising seas. But, you know, it's going to continue rising between now and then. You know, it all depends upon, in that range, I think, you know, the question of how many big storms we get, another Sandy, you know, in a decade when the seas are higher, will have a much bigger impact. You're going to see more and more coastal erosion, more and more flooding in low-lying areas. Like, you know, I mean, I was out in Broad Channel, a neighborhood in Jamaica Bay, while I was reporting this book, and, you know, I went back to get my car at high tide one evening after a meeting, and it was up to, you know, the wheel wells in Broad Channel. Yeah. I mean, places like Howard Beach, South Brooklyn, all of those are already very, you know, already getting flooded all the time. The Rockaways, of course, are very vulnerable, even though they just put a new sort of seawall up there. It's vulnerable from the Jamaica Bay side. Certainly, as you know, parts of Long Island are very vulnerable. And I think that, you know, I mean, New York is doing, you know, a lot of really good stuff. I mean, they have a really smart, progressive political leadership on this. The guy who runs the sort of head of resilience for New York City is a really great guy. I would say that they're thinking about this, you know, more progressively than probably anybody in the United States right now. But there's just a whole lot of stuff, you know, built, you know, houses and, as you said, railroads, subways that are at risk. And so even though they're doing a lot to try to prepare for this, elevating critical infrastructure and buildings and things, there's still just a huge amount of risk.
Yeah, a lot. I know that most of the buildings, I work a lot down in the southern end of Manhattan, and for a while there was no underground parking garages, and they also started closing the bottoms of all the buildings while they moved all the generators and things to seventh floor. You know, they just said, right. No longer basement generators and oil tanks and all that stuff. It's all been moved up into the buildings. And they're also building that wall now. What do you think about that wall that they're trying to build around Manhattan?
Well, it's called, you know, informally called the Big U. It basically goes around lower Manhattan from like around 45th Street on each side all the way down, you know, and around like a big kind of horseshoe. They're supposed to break ground on the first part of that next year, 2018, along the Lower East Side, basically where the big flooding was after Sandy, where they knocked out that generator that or transfer station that caused a big blackout in New York City. You know, I think walls are problematic for lots of reasons. Among them, you know, the politics of who's behind them and who's not, the sort of false sense of security you get from being behind them. There's a lot of things that problems with walls, but I think for Lower Manhattan, given the value of the real estate, probably the most valuable real estate in the world, it's inevitable that something like that will be built around Lower Manhattan. The one that they're designing is, they don't even want like calling it a wall; they call it a barrier with amenities. But it'll be like berms and kind of park-like, and you know, I mean, I think if they can get the money together to do it, you know, no one knows that that's actually. I mean, I think it will happen eventually and inevitably, but it's going to take a while. I think it's fine. You know, I think it's one kind of protection that you can do in a place like Lower Manhattan. I think just sort of the idea that we're going to respond to sea level rise by just building walls everywhere is very problematic and delusional and not going to happen. But I think in the case of Lower Manhattan, it's probably the right thing to do.
Well, we're running out of time here, but I would like you to touch on one thing that you had a sense that our military understands that this is really problematic for the security of the United States and that they can't say anything about it because of the politics of the situation. Could you just address that briefly before we go?
Sure. I mean, I spent a lot of time at, made several trips to Naval Station Norfolk in Norfolk, Virginia, which is the largest naval base in the world. And 75,000 people work there and are stationed there. It's just this enormous military complex. And, you know, I was there with Secretary of State John Kerry one time, and, you know, it was very clear, you know, I was standing next to him, to Secretary Kerry, when he asked. He's very well aware of the risks from flooding there and everything. It's a very low-lying area, similar kind of problems to Miami. He asked the commander of the base, how much time does this base have? And the commander said, you know, 20 to 50 years, and we'll have to be out of here. And that's kind of remarkable to think about, moving a base like that. But while I was there on one of my trips, I noticed that, you know, some of the piers for the ships were higher. The new piers were about 6 feet higher than the older piers. And I said to the commander of the base, is that because of climate change and sea level rise? Is that why you raised them? And he said, yes, basically. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, yes, but we couldn't say that because if we said that we were building them higher because of sea level, the deniers in Congress would have zeroed this out of our budget. We wouldn't have had the money to do it. So we pretended we were doing it for another reason, but we were doing it for sea level rise. And, you know, the military is actually, the Navy especially, is very in sort of inspiring about this because they're very practical-minded. They're, as they said to me, you know, we deal with the world as it is, not as we wish it to be. And, you know, there's not very many deniers in the U.S. Navy about what's going on. They know very well what's going on. They're preparing for it in their own way. They're thinking about it. And they just can't talk openly about it because of the weird politics in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So much. Your book is loaded with stuff. We're talking to Jeff Goodell, who wrote The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World. Highly recommended, folks. If this subject interests you, you'll learn a whole bunch of stuff. Good job, Jeff. Is there one last thought you want to leave everybody in some manner? Are you optimistic, for instance?
I was just going to say that. I mean, all that we've been talking about is sort of, you know, kind of dark stuff. But I actually do think that, you know, a lot of really interesting things are going to emerge from this, that new ways of living along the coastline, floating cities, floating houses, more adaptable places. I mean, I don't think this means the end of sort of living near water. In fact, I think it'll mean a lot of people living more and more in the water. I mean, and we already see there's great examples of beautiful cities that are built around water, like Venice, even though Venice is in trouble for other reasons that we talked about earlier. But, you know, there's only possibility of reimagining life along the water. It's just going to be, we just have to think about it differently. You know, we have to think about being adaptable and living in new ways. But I actually think there's going to be this huge explosion of creativity along the coastlines, and there's going to be, you know, a real kind of upside to this as well as a real downside.
Well, thank you for coming on, Jeff. The book is The Water Will Come. I highly recommend you picking it up. But it was really a very interesting book, and thank you for writing it.
Thank you for having me on. It's great to talk to you.
Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.